Blog Talk Radio.
About some interesting union issues, things that are facing us. Excuse me.
They have a little article here on questions about the fast track vote, which I think would be interesting. Many Americans have questions about last week's House vote against the undemocratic, unaccountable fast track bill. The bottom line is that fast track is stalled for now. To advance to the president's desk, both parts of the bill had to advance. But the first part of the bill, a vote on trade adjustment assistance, the TAA program, was defeated by a resounding 302-126. This vote effectively killed the bill, but only temporarily. Speaker John Boehner, a Republican from Ohio, preserved the right to have a revote on that portion of the bill. And even if a revote fails, the House leadership can repackage the bill in a number of ways. In other words, this is not over, folks. Global corporations and their allies in Congress will continue to try every way and every trick in the book to ensure a clear path for bad trade deals that lower our wages, endanger our air and water, and increase corporate influence over the country. And that's really bad. Really, really bad. Let's see, there's a little more to this comment. Let's see what else they have to say. Over the years, millions of American workers have lost jobs due to trade. The TAA program has been around since the 1960s to help workers displaced by trade to receive training to help them find a job. It has always been a necessary part of trade policy, but it's never been sufficient to protect working families from bearing the brunt of bad trade policy. Even its best form, TAA, is a modest program. It doesn't create jobs and doesn't ensure workers find jobs that match their prior pay and benefits. How did TAA become linked to job-killing trade deals? Since the international trade is permanent, TAA should be permanent. Instead, TAA is designed to expire periodically so that the need to renew it often coincides with the desires of the corporate elite to advance new trade deals. It has been used as a bargaining chip to provide cover for continuing the current failed trade rules. So is TAA being used as a bargaining chip to advance corporate trade policies that kill jobs? Yep, and if the TAA portion of the fast-track bill passes, the whole bill passes. It is flat-out wrong to hold a needed program hostage to advance a trade agenda that benefits the few at the expense of the many. As the AFL-CIO President Trumker has made clear, Congress should debate whether the Trans-Pacific Partnership promotes the shared values of democracy and prosperity that the United States stands for, as well as set high standards for countries such as China to follow, on whether it merely speeds the global race to the bottom. Democratic leader Nancy Pelosi put it, "We must go on business as usual and create a new model for trade agreements. But we can't have any of those debates if the cynical TAA fast track package moves ahead." On Friday, Friends of Working Families in the House took a stand. No more advancing a trade agenda that has increased inequality, devastated communities across the country in exchange for a program that should be permanent to begin with. That was the right thing to do. Was the TAA proposal in the Fast Track bill ever adequate? No. The TAA provisions in the 2015 Fast Track bill are widely inadequate. The TAA bill is significantly underfunded, providing only $400 million for training, as opposed to $575 million included in a version introduced by Sandy Levin from Michigan and Adam Smith from Washington. Pending trade deals, including the TPP, that's the Trans-Pacific Partnership, the TTIP, and the TISA, are poised to blow the lid off the $450 million cap. So this version of the TAA also would exclude public sector workers from coverage. This is unacceptable. Workers in every sector are vulnerable to trade-related job losses. Working families must stand together and not allow ourselves to be picked off one by one. The AFL-CIO is committed to winning a better TAA program, no matter what happens to the TPP. So act now. Keep up the good work by thanking those members of Congress who stood with working families on trade by voting no to both parts of the Fast Track bill. So that's important.
Very important.
Great. Oh.
The picture of Bruce Jenner's cat, the beagle. Dog.
Looking very confused.
That's very funny. Very funny. Oh, Clinton says, we should completely open our borders. Oh, yeah. She's such a wiener.
I don't like
President Clinton.
Hillary Clinton.
Well, President Hillary Clinton, right?
Not yet.
Wannabe President Hillary Clinton wants to screen people in Central America in order to label them as refugees and have them sent directly to the United States.
Oh, my God.
She's advocating opening our borders completely, as everyone wanting to come into the country need only say that their life is being threatened and they get a free trip to the U.S. and a cozy place to live, often equipped with things like flat-screen TVs, new clothes, and AstroTurf sports areas.
Oh, no,
all in the taxpayer's dime. This is cool. Very interesting. But there's a page two to this article. He says,
Obama has proposed such a plan, starting with Honduras.
The communists in our government want to destroy the sovereignty of the United States, rendering our Constitution void, and join the U.S., Canada, and Mexico into an entity called the North American Union, as exposed by Lou Dobbs years ago.
Yep.
And here she is.
Let's see what she has to say.
Hillary,
kill her with her own words.
Hillary the Hillary.
Do you think you have a Latino problem?
I hope not. I never have before, so I hope not. Obviously, we have a lot of problems that we have to address together.
But not a Latino
together.
Problem.
Well, the Latino community has problems that we have to all work on, but I don't think I have any problems.
What I'm saying is, because recently you said about the Central American children coming to the United States, that we have to send them back.
Well, that was a sort of a short circuit of what I have said overall. I've made several points. There's two kinds of children getting to our border. There are what we might call migrant children and what we might call refugee children. And within our legal framework, we need to, on a humanitarian basis, provide emergency care for all the children. I don't care who they are or where they come from. They need to be given the basics, the necessities, and as much love as we can. But we also, if they're migrant children or if they're refugee children, we have certain procedures we're supposed to follow. And what President Obama is saying is Congress hasn't given him the resources to do what is necessary to appropriately handle these children.
So you don't think we should send them back?
Well, because some of them should be sent back.
Just because your child gets across the border, that doesn't mean that the child gets to stay.
That's
what you said.
Yeah, but that's what I meant, is that just because a child gets across the border, what category does that child end up in?
But who would you deport?
Whoever was in the category of where they don't have a legitimate claim for asylum, where they don't have some kind of family connection, those children should be returned to their families.
Should we change the 2008 law?
I think there has to
be. For quick deportation?
I don't agree that we should change the law.
No.
I think that's why I'm advocating an appropriate procedure, well funded by the Congress, which they are resisting doing, so that we can make individual decisions. You know, there may be some kids who definitely would face terrible danger if they return.
I met some of them at the border, and they said they would be killed if you send them back.
Well, you know, we send kids back all the time. And
but
one
we have a responsibility if something happens to them.
I
think no government should be in the business of deporting endangered children.
No, of course not. But that's why we need a process to determine who falls into that category. And then I do think that the Obama administration has made a good suggestion. We've done this in Vietnam. We've done this in Haiti. We should be setting up a system in Honduras, Guatemala, El Salvador to screen kids. And, in fact, John McCain
over there. Before they're being sent.
Yes, before they even come. Before they get in the hands of coyotes, or they get on the beast, or they're raped. Or
so you're dealing with a system, setting up a system, let's say in Honduras, and screen them before coming here.
Yes, and if they have
lived. That's new.
Well,
that's
that's why I am emphasizing the procedures, because I think a lot of people are understandably, as I am, upset about what's happening to these kids. But if we don't have a procedure, it's not going to stop. More kids are going to come, and I don't know what the percentage is that never make it alive or never make it in good shape, but there's a pretty big percentage of kids who are treated like that. So I want to have a sensible, orderly process to try to take care of these children.
Good look. She doesn't make sense.
In other words, if she's saying they should apply to the embassy, which is what the thing is right now, and that they're not doing.
That's right.
Because it doesn't work.
That's right.
So they just leave. So she's saying we should do what we already have.
Yeah.
Okay. How innovative of her. All right. Let's see if I just got it straight. But that's what I heard her say.
Okay. You don't need to be an inside the Fed to see the data that the central bank will use to make an interest rate decision.
No, here's all the data the Fed uses to make an interest rate decision.
Here's all the data. It says, think, the Federal Reserve should get off their backside and finally lift interest rates. Or do you think it's premature to move? Whatever you conclude, do so with reviewing the economy in as much detail as the Fed does. Here are updates on virtually all the reports that were presented at the last federal, I think I'll pass on this because I don't need the 21 pages of reports here, but it's just interesting that what are they looking at to raise? All they're looking at to raise interest rates is their own greed, basically. Yeah. Charging, what they do is when they charge interest on your money, all right, that's what the Fed is. What the hell? What good is this? Is this Fed? Doesn't make any sense.
To me, it doesn't.
Makes no sense. We'll get there. Billionaire investor Kirk Kerkorian died at 98.
Kerkorian.
Las Vegas hotels and bought and sold MGM 3 times has died. Okay. Well, sorry about that. He had a pretty good life, huh? 98 years old and a billionaire. Let's see. Pope drafts encyclical that calls for swift action on climate change. This guy's funny. I got some other good ones up there. He's calling now for income equality, for global income equality, and all kinds of great stuff. The guy's just amazing. Doesn't make much sense, but. American restaurant granted permission to sell dog meat.
Oh, my God.
Yeah.
Oh, that's horrible.
A Los Angeles restaurant has been granted permission to consume and sell dog meat on religious grounds. Filipino group successfully argued in court. Imagine that. Religious grounds?
That's horrible.
Consumption of dog meat violated their religious... Filipino group successfully argued that the banning of the consumption of dog meat violated their religious rights. Puchao de Manila Eatery and Fine Dining, I question that, has been granted provisional permission to sell and consume dog meat while the Supreme Court decides if their case has merit. The restaurant is allowed to slaughter up to 3 dogs per day, with a stipulation that they must be put down humanely. The World Animal Protection Agency called the decision shocking and vowed to fight tooth and nail to ensure this act is not allowed to consume, or continue, rather. In the Philippines today, there is an abundance of dog meat sold in restaurants and markets, and the meat is as sold for as little as $1.30 per kilogram. The trading and selling of dog meat brings in nearly $3.8 million per year, and nearly 500,000 dogs are killed for meat every year. Oh my God, look at this one.
I can't look at it. It's horrible.
You got a slaughterhouse here.
It's horrible.
Even regions around the globe still consume, 11 regions still consume dog meat. Those being China, Indonesia, Korea, Mexico, Philippines, Polynesia, Taiwan, Vietnam, the Arctic, Antarctic, and Switzerland.
Switzerland?
Yeah. Punchout the Menu Eatery says the fine dining says the dishes will range from American style cuisine such as Chichihuahua chops to Korean inspired dishes such as Bostongtang or dog soup.
I don't want to look at that. It's horrible. I can't look at that.
Those dogs.
It's making me feel sick. I don't like to look at anything hung up to die like that. It's horrible.
No. Hey, did you know that Lindsey Graham is running for president? Yeah, that's the senator there from South Carolina.
And his parents ran a whites-only bar until 1970s.
Yeah, they ran a whites-only bar until the 1970s. Wow. Lindsey Graham. Does that surprise you? Of course not. Republican candidate Lindsey Graham's parents ran a segregated South Carolina bar even after discrimination in public accommodations was banned under the Civil Rights Act of 1964. The revelations come in Graham's newest memoir, My Story, which was released to Politico ahead of the Wednesday release, and the upcoming ebook he recalls fondly his childhood working in his family's bar in a rural community in central South Carolina. Ian Boner has the same idea there. Boner, Boehner, Boehner. Yeah. He was a bartender with his family bar, too. Times being that they were, most of our customers were white. Political quote, Grandma's writing, "My folks sold beer to anyone of legal age, but I'm sorry to say for many of the years my parents operated the bar, black people were expected to drink the beer they purchased from us off the premises." And according to Graham, their practice ended in the 1970s, much later than it should have. Later, when a white patron began hassling a black patron, his father cracked the racist over the head with Young's Lindsley's Viking helmet. Yeah, right, I'm sure. He also jokes that if child services were stopped by, his parents likely would have lost custody, given his fondness for sampling patrons' cigarettes and beers when they went to the bathroom. You guys are freaking moron. And Lindsey Graham. I'll tell you, please, please, God, don't let him run any further than
this. You have to have somebody that gives you a few laughs.
Run to the bathroom. That's about it. God. Anyway, Jeb Bush says, "I would govern like Lyndon Johnson as president." Can you imagine a Republican saying he would run like Lyndon Johnson? I mean, that's freaking ridiculous. Lyndon Johnson was responsible for the biggest debt this country's ever seen. All right, and on top of that, he was so hated that he couldn't run for a second term.
Yeah.
You know, and Jeb Bush wants to govern like him. Also, you can thank Lyndon Johnson for using the Social Security money to pay for the Vietnam War. That's right, the war we should never have been in the first place. So. Anyway, if Jeb wants to be that guy, God forbid, why wouldn't he be like brother or father, you know, brother Bush, Paul Crooks?
Well, right. He will.
To the Miami Herald, Bush made those comments Wednesday and said in San Antonio, Florida, at San Leo University while speaking about education, immigration, and energy politics. Bush did not address Johnson's Great Society and War on Poverty programs, about which Ronald Reagan once famously quipped, "We had a war on poverty and poverty won." Instead, he was referencing Johnson's mastery of the so-called sausage-making process in Congress. He vowed to approach the presidency as master of the Senate, as biographer Robert Carroll describes Johnson. He went and he cajoled, he begged, he threatened, he bluffed, he hugged. He did what leaders do, which is they personally get engaged to make something happen. Bush said of Johnson, Bush cited Carroll's latest book about Johnson, The Passage of Power, which covers the first part of Johnson's presidency. The wheeling and dealing Johnson loved and relished is what will be needed to pass bills such as immigration regulations. That process is also how government gets expanded and cronyism thrives. Bush, who has a book on comprehensive immigration reform due out next month, said it was un-American to have illegal immigration living in fear of exposure with illegal immigrants. He says, and to me, I'm here at this great Catholic institution, and this is what my church teaches me. It is completely un-American to require people living in the shadows. Declared. Yes. Yeah, it freaks me out, man, I'll tell you. That just freaks me out.
Mm-hmm.
These guys don't even know what the hell they're talking about, you know? God, I feel like I've done 100 times more news than most newscasts.
Yeah.
In half an hour. But anyway, let's see. Whoa. Red Francis calls for new global authority to redistribute wealth in the name of global warming. Wow. What do you think of that there?
It's the Pope.
Pope Francis, are we done?
Yeah.
Will this week call for changes in lifestyles and energy consumption to avert the unprecedented destruction of the ecosystem before the end of this century. According to a leaked draft of a papal encyclical in a document released by an Italian magazine on Monday, the pontiff will warn that the failure to act would have grave consequences for all of us. And the article goes on. But, you know, the guy is just... this is something interesting. Yeah.
Oh, he wasn't on the...
maybe he was sick the other day or something.
Yeah, the only way we can get to hear him is you have to get up at 4:45 on Sunday morning.
Yeah, he's on the...
McLaughlin
Report or something.
Yeah.
And
This is Pat Buchanan that we're talking about.
Yeah.
Leo and I happen to like him, even though we don't agree with him 95% of the time. But,
well, we do.
On a lot of things, but there are things I don't agree with him on.
That's
okay.
True.
I think he's very honest.
He's pro-Palestinian, anti-Israel. So, I mean, that's for a conservative to be that way. I got to give him some respect. Conservative pundit Pat Buchanan is out with a column. It is Third World America Inevitable? Today, hailing Ann Coulter's new book, Adios America, warning that the immigration reform will mean the end to America as the Western nation we have been, and the beginning of America's life as what Ann calls unapologetically a third world hellhole. Buchanan warns that ethnic diversity will fuel racial tensions, violence and terrorism, likening the purported dangers of immigration to Russian aggression in Eastern Europe and threats from North Korea. He also laments that immigration will cripple the electoral prospects of the GOP, predicting that it will soon become impossible for a Republican presidential candidate to win a White House bid. But, he said, thousands of U.S. troops safeguard the border of South Korea. U.S. warships patrol the South Korea at sea, stand witness to the territorial claims of Asian allies against China. U.S. troops move in and out of the Baltic Seas to signal our willingness to defend the frontiers of these tiny NATO allies. Yet nothing that happens on these borders imperils America so much as what is happening on our own bleeding border with Mexico. Over three decades, the border have been a causeway into the U.S. for millions of illegal immigrants who are changing the face of America to the delight of those who think the country we grew up in was ugly. All the sides of this quarrel have been using the figure of 11 million people here illegally. In her new bestseller, Adios America, Ann Coulter makes a compelling case that the real figure is close to 30 million. If that is true, and if the next president embraces amnesty and a path of citizenship for illegal immigrants, what that will mean the end to America as a Western nation we have been, and the beginning of America's life as what Ann calls unapologetically a third world hellhole. Politically, immigrants from third world countries, as they rely upon the government for food, housing assistance, health care, and the education of their children, support the party of government. Mitt Romney lost the two fastest-growing major minorities, Hispanics and Asians, who now account for more than a fifth of our population and a seventh of our voters, by 40 points. And as their numbers and voting percentages rise, the GOP will be facing that reaching 270 electoral votes is not only more difficult than in Reagan's day, it has become impossible. And among the myths or lies drummed into the heads of Americans is that we have already been a nation of immigrants and diversity. Racial, ethnic, and religious diversity is a strength. As the addition of tens of millions of Asian and African Muslim strength in the old continent that ruled the world, or do they imperil its security and its survival as a cradle and heartland of the West? As radical racial, ethnic, and religious hatreds pull people apart and create terrorists all over our disintegrating world, why would we make ourselves even more diverse? And I have to agree with that. That was Pat Buchanan. I do agree with him on that. It's so dangerous. Yeah. Oh, okay. Right. I am going to go to a music break because I think it's time. But we'll be back, and that'll be cool. So we'll be back in about a few minutes. Talk to you then. Why this happening there. right? Kansas lawmaker concluded the longest legislative session in state history Friday night by approving a state of regressive tax hikes that will balance the state's budget by targeting low-income workers and their families. More than half of the $384 million in new revenue expected from the tax hike will come from cigarette taxes and sales taxes, two policies described as regressive because they fall more heavily on lower-income taxpayers than on the wealthy. And even though everyone who shops will pay the new 6.5% sales tax rate, up from 6.15% in previous years, and the eighth highest of any state, according to the Tax Foundation, the move is regressive because poorer shoppers already have to stretch each dollar further, more flush counterparts.
It's very hard for today for people shopping, very, very difficult. They just don't make enough money to pay the balance, and they get further and further in debt. They just pay
the
interest
on
their credit cards.
Yeah, the state offers a limited tax credit for grocery purchases to low-income families that slightly offsets the unevenness of the sales tax impact. But that credit is capped by $500 and cannot be claimed by families earning over $30,000 a year. A family of four that earns too much to qualify for the credit will pay nearly $700 a year in sales tax payments on their food, according to Kansas City Star analyst of Friday's bill that found the bulk of the burden falls on people making less than $50,000 annually. Families with more slack in their budgets to absorb the sales tax hike are also getting to retain a vast majority of the windfall deferred to them in 2012 and 2013, all right, by Governor Sam Brown's act, massive tax cuts for the wealthy. Those packages drove rates up for the poorest 20% of the state, provided a small net reduction in tax liabilities for middle-class earners, and gave over $20,000 a year on average back to the richest hundredth of taxpayers. This one goes on and on, but it shows the mother how crazy bastard this guy is. I mean, it's just ridiculous in Kansas. Totally ridiculous. Judd Apatow is, but he says Trump is running for keep me famous, not president. I don't know. Oh, it's pretty famous. Following his appearance on last night's Daily Show to promote his new book, Sick in the Head, Conversations
He's
About
speaking
the
Speaking about himself or members of his family or all of
the above? I have no idea. I'm reading it here. Director Judd Apatow stopped by Bloomberg Politics and All Due Respect Tuesday afternoon, and host Mark Halperin and John Hellerman wasted no time confronting him with the day's biggest political story, Donald Trump. Apatow, who actually wrote one of President Barack Obama's White House correspondent dinner jokes about Trump a few years back, expressed some healthy skepticism about the sincerity of the billionaire mogul's 2016 campaign. Trump is a worthy target because he only runs for president to promote Celebrity Apprentice, Apatow said at the NBC reality show. He's not running for president. He's running to keep me famous. Well, laughed out as a comedian or some sort, I guess, too. So, let's see. Later, Apatow addressed the prospect of 2016 election without a nightly voice of Jon Stewart on the air. I wish that they would take that. Jon Stewart changed a lot what happened in politics, he said, but that is just not the case. As evidence, he pointed out that the Daily Show host couldn't have been funnier about George W. Bush, but that didn't stop him from getting elected twice. That's true. Voting fraud did that. However, socially, Apatow says he thinks Stewart, along with South Park, has made a huge impact on a generation of young people who now believe prejudice is ridiculous. Yeah, well, good for him. I don't know who the hell Apatow is, but I don't really care. So anyway, I just thought that was an interesting topic because I kind of like Donald Trump as a candidate because he sparks a lot of fun in the campaign. You know what I mean? Uh-huh. You know what I mean? Not too many people really like him.
But he's got a bulldog heart, and he goes after what he wants, and hey, that's the way he's got to do it, right? So, I like to see him debating Hillary. I like to see him debating Bernie. Would you like to see him debate Bernie? I think Bernie would tear him up, but still,
I do too.
But still, it would be fun to see him.
He says these outrageous things and then can't back them up.
Yeah.
And so he'll never agree to be in a debate because he'll look like an ass.
Oh, he'll do it. Maybe not. Well, let's see. It says here, refused to denounce Trump's anti-immigrant screed. Okay. Yeah, he says he hates immigrants.
Oh, well.
Yeah, he doesn't like them. RNC, the Republican National Committee, awkwardly refuses to denounce Trump's anti-immigrant screed. Okay. Want to read that?
All right.
See if you can. Yeah. See it, all right.
Okay. Just point me to the...
Hours.
Oh, I see it. Yeah, I have my glasses on now. Hours after Donald Trump launched into an anti-immigrant tirade during his presidential campaign announcement and claimed that Mexican immigrants are rapists and drug dealers, it was horrible. A top Republican Party official has done nothing to denounce those comments. John Spicer, the Republican National Committee chief strategist and communications director, told CNN that Trump's comments were not helpful to the cause of making the Republican Party inclusive to Latino voters.
Really?
No kidding. He doesn't make it. I wouldn't feel like having. But almost immediately, Spicer pivoted to the topic of improving border security. My question is this: if Donald Trump were president, would we have to pay for the chief hair to take care of her? Somebody to do his hair every day?
Chief's hair take care of her.
Yeah.
That's a good one.
Like in the old days.
It'll be the chief's hair take care of her.
Remember in the old days they had the guy who was the chamber pot guy?
Oh, really?
Yeah. Guy who wiped the royal bum.
No kidding.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, I thought they did that themselves.
Don't even know whether they do now.
Well, that's pretty weird. But anyway, I don't know how we got on that topic, but how did we get on that topic? Oh, the hair take care of her.
Yeah. Every time I look at Donald Trump and he says something about running, I wonder if there'll be a secretary of hair.
Maybe. And the
guy will have to run around with hair clippers and
and
spray bottles.
Well, nobody gets to see him to have his hair done. He has his barber and he does it in a closed booth.
I bet he does.
Nobody's allowed to see him get his hair cut. No. No, because he does I think he wears a wig.
Oh.
But anyway. CNN commentators.
Oh, that's just back and forth. The interesting part is over.
Oh, okay. All right,
let's put this on.
Trump announces he's running for president. Let's hear this one.
Yeah, let's hear it in his own words.
Wait a minute. Let's
hear it. Appeal to Hispanic and other minority voters. This is what he said. When Mexico sends its people, they're not sending their best. They're not sending you. They're not sending you. They're sending people that have lots of problems. And they're bringing those problems with us. They're bringing drugs. They're bringing crime. They're rapists. And some, I assume, are good people. But I speak to border guards, and they tell us what we're getting. And it only makes common sense. It only makes common sense.
Now, there are a lot of Hispanic voters who will not be happy, Sean, with Donald Trump saying something like that. And let me read from the GOP postmortem, the autopsy. It says, among the steps Republicans take in the Hispanic community and beyond, we must embrace and champion comprehensive immigration reform. And it talks about inclusivity. So how does that need square with the kind of rhetoric that you hear Donald Trump using?
Well, I mean, as far as painting Mexican Americans with that kind of a brush, I think that's probably something that is not helpful to the cause.
No kidding.
I think to the issue of illegal immigration, Mr. Trump and others have addressed that we need to be very firm on border security and look at ways to make sure that America fixes its broken immigration problem and finds a way to allow for people from whether it's Mexico, Canada, Europe, or wherever to enter this country in a more systematic and helpful way to our overall economy.
Okay, I want to ask you.
Yeah, I wish you heard him talk more. That's what I heard. I was like, ah, I was listening to him.
Okay.
This was a couple of days ago. I was laughing because he was so outrageous and stupid.
He is. He can really come up with some really.
Yeah, he wanted. He was talking to somebody, and he said he was having Mexico build a wall on the border.
And they were going to pay for it. He wants Mexico to build it. Yeah.
Yeah, and he was going to make them build it.
He would make them, yeah.
Yeah, right.
Smoking marijuana is 114 times safer than drinking alcohol. Study. World Truth TV.
Yep.
That's a lot of times. 114 times safer.
Mm-hmm.
As debates over marijuana legalization continues in the United States, a new study suggests that smoking the controversial plant is about 114 times safer than drinking alcohol. In fact, alcohol is found to be the deadliest drug on an individual level, at least when it comes to the likelihood of a person dying due to consuming a lethal dose. Heroin and cocaine were the last most deadly substances, followed by tobacco, ecstasy, and meth. Trailing up the rear was marijuana. And according to the team of international researchers behind the study, published in the journal Scientific Reports, findings suggest that marijuana risks, at least those related to mortality, are trumped when compared to substances like tobacco. And they show it all. They show a graph and all that kind of stuff. That's really interesting. But anyway, just so you know, what's this? New NASA data shows how the world is running out of water. That's not a good sign. That's not a good thing at all. The Washington Post. Want to read this?
Sure. More than half of satellite system flags stressed. We did. We read this last night, the stressed aquifer.
Oh, yeah, we
read
that last night? Oh, we did. Okay.
Yeah.
I'm good. I'm not too sharp like that.
I read it.
Did we read this one?
No. A presidency in free fall, not at all.
Okay, let's read this.
This always happens in the last term of a president.
It does, yeah.
I mean, this is not unusual. He does what he wants to do. He doesn't care. He doesn't give conferences.
Yeah.
He's not nice to people. And
well, the reason I say that is because of this Trans-Pacific trade policy.
I don't like that at all.
Nobody likes it. And, you know,
the Republicans do.
Sure they do. But, you know, they're jerks. And they're corporatists, you know, and that's what they are. And this guy is the same. If the only negative event last week had been the humiliating loss on trade authority, President Obama might already have reached the nadir of his presidency. But when you consider the direction of the war against the Islamic State, a massive cybersecurity breach, and another embarrassing and indefensible capitulation, on Iran, one senses that the president is a lame dead duck.
Yeah, yeah.
Marking the time until January 2017.
I would agree with that.
The free trade debacle was, from the perspective of Republicans, a time of schadenfreude. For so many times in the past, the president has ignored their concerns, ridiculed their views, and attacked their motives, that despite their own support for free trade, the president brought a major satisfaction on the GOP side. The posted note, the outcome was especially frustrating for a president who had spent 4 years unable to advance major initiatives, including a tax and budget grand bargain, stricter gun control and immigration reform, through a Congress in the face of relentless Republican opposition. His singular ability to offend and ignore friends and foe alike has proven to be his undoing. That the Democrats sunk their own pork-laden trade adjustment package carefully negotiating by Minority Leader Nancy Pelosi made the president's predicament all the more satisfying in conservative quarters. Now, perhaps Democrats will reconsider, for from the GOP perspective, perhaps trade authority can be passed without the union's goodies. But the image of a president doing so little too late and too ineffectively remains.
Okay. I haven't talked to anybody who feels...
Who believes in this trade deal. No. Because they're just going to destroy it, you know, and destroy the country with it. It's just a horrible deal, but there's so much money behind it, you know, that that's the way it is.
Yeah. It's a bad bill all around.
I don't think we read this last time.
Yes, you
did.
Yeah, you read that.
That was a sad thing.
Yeah.
But anyway, yeah.
I don't understand that. Leaked Pope, climate encyclical. I don't remember the Catholic Church getting involved in environmental issues.
No, they are now. And he wants to create it for those who are waiting for the official release of Pope Francis' climate change encyclical before believing their lying eyes may still want to wait until Thursday to make up their minds. That's when the official ceremony with infamous climate Nazi Hans
Joachim Schellenhuber
renouncing the Pope will be held, announcing the papal plan for us to all curl up into fetal balls and surrender to the United Nations.
And his name is Hans Joachim Schellenhuber.
Okay. It's a detestable thought, and it's understandable that people would be reluctant to admit betrayal on such a grand scale. Saddam Hussein professed a belief that George W. Bush would never really execute him, one he maintained until he found himself dangling by a rope. And sometimes people are hopeful to a fault. The Italian magazine El Expresso had leaked a draft copy of the 192-page document in Italian, a version which the Vatican says does not represent the final text. It's unlikely that means that the global government proportions were just a trial balloon in the sections on Marxist wealth distribution from wealthy nations to poor will be ultimately scrubbed. The substance will remain the same. The Vatican admits that the paper is intended to influence the UN and its member nations to adopt global piracy and
authoritarianism.
Authoritarianism.
Or as they like to call it, doing the right thing in the lead up to the Paris Climate Summit this fall. It is a repackaging of the same false claims we've heard for decades, claims which haven't come true and require the redefinitions of the problem. It's renaming and constant warnings of dire consequences in the face of nothing. The same UN and IPCC lies are presented as facts in spite of a majority of scientists outside the UN cabal spilling the beans on the conspiracy. The document was written by many of the same world government fraudsters who are entrenched in the movement, some of whom will be in attendance as official release on Thursday. The encyclical is the Pope adding his name to the list of Marxist agents, a dangerous development given his global platform
from which to create an illusion and to mislead the masses.
Yeah, I missed that. Sorry about that jumbling of words, folks.
There are six main points raised in the document, according to the Italian publication.
As follows. Global warming is real, is one. It makes the same ridiculous false claims of rising sea levels without pointing out a single specific example anywhere in the globe where it is happening. Sea level is the same everywhere. If they were rising, we'd all see it when we went to the beach, wherever our beach might be.
Two. Fossil fuels are responsible, and we must shift to non-existent renewable energy to meet the needs it can possibly meet. The fact that this would result in needless hardship, including starvation due to an inability to meet demands, is largely ignored.
3, it's the job of governments to act, and that means the UN this fall in Paris. Global taxation adopted at the climate summit, along with the UN mandate, would force those with the ability to pay to do so, or else with enforceable legal authority.
Number 4.
Do they mean government, states, or individual people?
They'll come down and do.
Poor people feel the impact, although there's no specifics that can be pointed to. As it's all just a fairy tale, poor people would be affected the most, and greedy developed nations are heartless abusers of the helpless.
The future tense is always used in their claims, as none of these things are really happening. It's wise, the sage alarmists tell us, to throw the world into absolute chaos in order to have an infinitesimal influence on something that might someday happen to an extremely limited degree. Then again, maybe they just want our stuff.
I think they want your stuff.
Yeah, and number 5, the money point. Literally, and along with immense power, the real reason behind the theatrics and deception is wealth redistribution. The encyclical states that the developed nations of the world are indiscriminate rapists of nature, and we are obligated to pay to clean up our mess. Well, I agree with that. We've got to share the wealth as we clean up as well. Just to be fair, the UN can oversee the operation for a fee. The National Journal summed up the papal paper saying the document goes after inaction by developed nations, which Francis says have been consuming resources without concern for the planet and the poor. Francis highlights other negative impacts of the developed world, such as the privatization of green spaces and the improper disposal of resources by industrial activity. Because of that, Francis says that it's incumbent on developed countries to consider the needs of the poor while addressing climate change and emissions. And this goes on quite a ways. But in essence, all he's trying to do is level the playing field there. But, you know, whether or not it's going to be through that, I do not know.
Hard job.
There's one more thing. I don't think we touched on this last night, did we?
I fell asleep early last night. I was just so tired.
Well, this one here, the U.S. deliberately backed ISIS to destabilize Syria. All right.
Mm-hmm.
Now, this is interesting because, I mean, I really, you know, what the whole story is here. Oh, it's Ron Paul. That's a good way to end it tonight. Let's see how Ron Paul says. Hopefully this won't go that long. No, it's 15 minutes long. You want us to do some of it?
Hello, everybody, and thank you for tuning in to the Liberty Report. With me today is Daniel McAdams, who is the Executive Director of the Institute for Peace and Prosperity. Daniel, welcome to our program again.
Thank you, Dr. Paul.
Well, there's some very interesting news this weekend. It's on an issue we talk about all the time on foreign policy in the Middle East. But most of us who follow this closely have heard about it, but I don't think the person that depends on regular TV has heard much about this. Matter of fact, it looks like a deliberate exclusion. And that has to do with the release of the Defense Intelligence Agency report of 2012. And Judicial Watch, which is a good organization, got the release of this. And although we had some suspicions of what was going on there, all of a sudden there is some confirmation, and I am quite sure that you have watched this carefully, and you might reveal a few of the things that were in this report.
Sure. Remember, this was an assessment taken just about a year after the U.S. actively began destabilizing the Syrian government. So the Defense Intelligence Agency, along with State Department's Intelligence and Resource Division, was actually very accurate in 2002 on Iraq. They did an assessment in 2012, and here are the three big takeaways from what was a heavily redacted report, but there were some still in it. The first being that the U.S. knew al-Qaeda was a key part of the Syrian opposition from the beginning. I remember we were told that these were moderate rebels, but the U.S. knew that al-Qaeda was key.
Which we funded.
The second was that the destabilization of Syria could result in the creation of an Islamic state in eastern Syria. And here's the quote from the report. This is exactly what the supporting powers to the opposition want. It said the supporting powers were the Western countries, the Gulf states, and Turkey. The third big takeaway, and this is interesting considering what's happened in the past week or so, the creation of an Islamic state in eastern Syria would have, quote, dire consequences and, quote, listen to this, create ideal atmosphere for al-Qaeda to return to Mosul and Ramadi.
See, for a while we've been trying to sort this out. Are these people just really stupid? You know, we go over and they're supporting the wrong people, and the weapons end up in the hands of ISIS. And we say, well, they're either totally inept or stupid. But it turns out it's their strategy. You know, it's somewhat, you know, very much like the strategy that was used in the 1980s when Brzezinski designed this thing that we're going to radicalize the Muslims, and which they did. The CIA radicalized Muslims in these madrasa schools. Hundreds of thousands of people went through these schools. And
including
this
Obama.
Continuation of this. So the failure was actually their goal. And they weren't there to stop ISIS, but their goal, and you mentioned it, the main goal of all this activity was anti-Assad, anti-Russia, part of that, and anti-Iran. But more directly at this moment, it's anti-Assad, and there was a lot of factions that wanted to do this. Obviously, Israel was in favor of this. The Saudis in particular were in favor of this. The military-industrial complex was in favor of this. And, of course, the people who would like to get a pipeline to secure the West against the East, since this is an East-West fight, was to get a pipeline through Syria so that Europe would have no dependency on Russia. It's exactly opposite of how a market would work, and people who are free and getting along with people, you know, things would work out quite differently.
Right.
So this was a design, and it's tragic that it was. And so it isn't stupidity. It's a stupid policy, but it wasn't that they didn't know what they were thinking they could do.
Well, it seemed like they could
idea?
Create the emergence of an Islamic State-type organization in Syria because they knew that's the only chance of overthrowing Assad.
Yeah.
Of course, the implications are that he wasn't unpopular, so it wasn't a democratic uprising. So you had to do that, but they hoped it wouldn't spill into Iraq. And, you know, a foreign policy based on hope like that doesn't seem awfully smart.
But
it tells you what's fine. It's 9 o'clock, and I want to thank everybody who joined us. And wish you the very best.
Yep.
And,
try to have a good night, folks, and do your own research. Decide what you think.
Absolutely.
Good night, folks.
Absolutely, absolutely. So good night, everybody. And
peace.
Yes. I can play my music, maybe even better.